Mr. Novo against National Union Fire Insurance.
Your Honor, my name is Tim Schaefer. I represent the Casanova family in the underlying case. This is an appeal from the granting of a motion for summary judgment by the district court finding that National Union did not breach its contract obligations. The issue is that the district court error in finding that National Union did not have a duty to drop down and defend under its umbrella policy once owners paid their policy limits and Travelers Insurance denied coverage and denied liability. The second issue is whether there was a material issue of fact that National Union failed to investigate, and failed to acknowledge coverage, that they didn't breach their duty or obligations under their contract. Now, the law or the facts of this case was clear that National Union was given actual notice of the claim, was afforded an opportunity to investigate the claim, was invited to participate in settlement negotiations, was able to confer with the defense counsel, and further was provided the entire traveler's file where there were communications where we were requesting, please provide us coverage, please defend, and there were denials. And the file was specifically provided by August 9th, and they received it August 10th. National Union nevertheless sat back, didn't acknowledge coverage, didn't defend, and didn't take any action whatsoever to protect Lively and Lavery, who clearly were permissive users and clearly insured under their policy. Instead, what they did is acquiesce to Travelers' conduct, where they were denying coverage and denying a defense and trying to avoid responsibility under a summary judgment motion, which is really totally irrelevant to this case because that was based on whether they were statutory employees or joint employees. The issue of this case is they were permissive users. They were clearly hauling trailer with the permission of Greif and had interchange agreements and fit under the definition of insurance under National Union's policy. What National Union did was try to simply engage in a course of conduct to avoid any kind of responsibility under their contract. As a result, they left Lively and Lavery to fend for themselves. They were facing a jury trial on September 19th on a wrongful death case of substantial value without coverage and without defense. Therefore, Lively and Lavery, in accordance with the law in Ohio, entered into a consent judgment where they agreed to settle the case, and the district court, Judge Simon, found that this amount was reasonable. This was appropriate and justified under the Ohio law when the insurance company
agreed to settle it, I gather, on terms that insulated themselves from any liability to the plaintiffs. Now, right. National Union has defended its judgment on the ground that as a consequence of that, since its client is not liable, there is no indemnity obligation. And you chose not to file a reply brief. So my inclination is to take that argument as given. Is there anything left in the case after that?
Well, yes, Your Honor. In fact, we already covered that argument in the Thompson case in our brief. We didn't think it needed a response. The law in Ohio under the Sanderson's case says that if you fail to provide coverage or you fail to defend, you are stopped from raising the consent clause or the legally obligated clause. Specifically, the Thompson case cited in our brief dealt with that exact issue. You will not later on bring up the fact that you're not legally obligated under the consent judgment as a defense. You've waived then or are stopped from asserting that. That was in our brief, Your Honor, and cited. That's why we didn't think there was a response.
Which case is this?
The Thompson case, Your Honor. I can try and cite the brief for you.
I can see it in the index. I'll take a look at it.
Yeah, that case is a case right on point, Your Honor. In fact, it's the only Ohio case on point they seem to ignore. And the court says, you will not come back and now try and invoke defenses under your contract, which is the same contract you breached. You would not use the consent clause. You would not use the legally obligated clause. The Thompson case is specifically on point on all fours on that, Your Honor. That's why we didn't file a rebuttal brief. We thought that this...
You know, the proposition, we're sure we're right, so we didn't need to tell the court our thinking, is not constructive.
Okay, Your Honor. We had thought we had already addressed it in our initial brief, citing the Thompson case. We thought we had responded adequately and didn't think it needed a response, Your Honor. It dealt with the Thompson heating case. This, but dealt with specifically the issue that they were not legally liable for the damages. That's what they tried to raise. That's on page 36 of our brief. We say, Your Honor, that they have violated their obligations under two different auspices. They not only failed to defend under the express terms of their policy, but they failed to provide coverage. In this case, owners had paid their policy limits under their express terms of their policy. They had no further duty to defend. When Travelers refused to defend or refused to provide coverage, then National Union, since it was an umbrella policy, not just a simple excess policy, had a duty to drop down and provide coverage. We cite the Train case, which was affirmed by this court, the Seventh Circuit, where it says when an insurer fails to defend, then the excess or umbrella policy should drop down and defend. Then they can come and file a subrogation claim against them. Ohio law specifically provides for that as well. Then National Union should have come down and defended, and then they could go after Travel. They'd have a remedy available. They chose not to do that. What's interesting is the coverage counsel, Mr. Ledman, for National Union, actually reviewed the file and admitted there's no question Lively and Labrie were permissive users. There's no question they're insured under the policy, and they say, Travelers, you breached your contract, and you empowered Lively and Labrie to take what action they needed, and you are bound by the judgment. But that same argument is equally applicable to National Union. They did precisely the same thing. And the appropriate remedy is not to leave an insured without coverage, without ability to defend.
By the way, I've just looked up Thompson online, and it doesn't deal with a legally obligated to pay clause. Those words aren't in the opinion.
The quote is, the sums which the insured should become obligated to pay or is legal liability for damages, Your Honor. We cited the case at page 36. It does contain, we have the quote there. Well, and Your Honor, the point is this, whether it's legally obligated to pay or the consent clause, in either case, they cannot raise exclusionary clauses once they breach the contract. So whether it's legally obligated to pay or whether we got up what to get their consent, they have waived that and have no right to raise that. Lastly, we'd like to say that the court, we thought, erred when they said that there was no request for a response for indemnity. We don't know how they could take that anything but a request for indemnity when we gave them notice through the risk manager, invited them to participate in the settlement conference, and then further forward them the entire file showing our request. We thought the court, when they said that they attached no significance to the fact that National Union could have requested the Travelers file earlier and they would have discovered they were insured, was not important. We think that goes right to the heart of the case. You have an absolute obligation under Ohio law to investigate and see if the claim falls within your policy and to provide coverage. You can't simply turn your back on it. When the court said there was no duty owed to Lively and Labrie, there's clearly a duty owed to your insureds to deal in good faith. We think for that reason that there were numerous genuine issues of material fact that rendered the motion for summary judgment inappropriate. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Schaefer.
May it please the court, Chip Schoenberger on behalf of National Union. Your Honors, I'd like to focus my time on the main argument in our brief, which is whether or not National Union had a defense obligation under the language of subparagraph 2, which is the horizontal defense provision. But before I get to that, I just want to clarify a couple points. There was no communication at all from Lively and Labrie to National Union. Plaintiff says that they were given notice and that we notified them. Well, that notice was on behalf of Greif, which was adverse to Lavery and Lively in the underlying litigation. They made no demand even for themselves, let alone some other party.
So there's no request for a defense in the record?
None whatsoever. And nor was there any response by National Union that they had analyzed the coverage and that they were taking one position or another, because no demand was made, no request by anyone, even their own named insured, because they had primary coverage who was responding. So getting back to subparagraph 2, the question of whether National Union had a defense obligation under that paragraph is it has two components. First, were the circumstances and the requirements of the policy provision met, number one? And number two, did Lavery and Lively invoke the provision? Now, they cite it in paragraph or page 15 of their brief. they characterize that subparagraph as saying that National Union has an obligation to defend when the damages are not covered by underlying insurance. But that's a misstatement of the policy language. The policy doesn't say when the damages are not covered. The policy says when damages are sought for bodily injury, property damage, personal injury, advertising injury. So in other words, a defined set of risks. When damages are sought for those risks that are covered by the National Union policy but not covered by any other underlying insurance. And that's the definition of umbrella coverage. But you have to look at this in terms of what how the two provisions work with each other. Subsection 1 is the excess coverage, and that deals with limits of the underlying insurance. And it says the National Union will defend when those limits of the primary policies are exhausted. Subsection 2, which is the one that's at issue here, that says that's the umbrella coverage, and that says the National Union will drop down and provide a defense when there is no primary coverage at all. Now, those circumstances didn't exist here because of one simple fact which the plaintiffs have completely overlooked but the district court recognized and relied on, and that's Owners Insurance. Owners was Lavery and Lavery's primary carrier, and they were defending. They defended right up to the end until the consent judgment was entered. Now, again, there was no communication at all, not a demand, to your point earlier, but also there was no information given to National Union that they were even contemplating this consent judgment. So to do so violates a material condition of the policy, which under the Champion case that we cited and the district court relied on, is a breach of the policy conditions that absolves National Union from any defense obligation or from any indemnity obligation as a matter of law, and that's Ohio law. So, and even beyond that, like I said before, the second part of the analysis is whether they invoke the provision, and Ohio law and then the Crocker case that we cited in our brief as well establishes that when you're dealing with an additional insured under an omnibus permissive user provision who is not the named insured, the defense obligation isn't triggered in a vacuum as a matter of law or by operation of law. It has to be invoked. That unknown party has to come forward and ask and demand that coverage be accepted, or at the very least say, we're expecting a defense from you. None of that was done. And that's exactly the point of subparagraph F3 of the conditions, which requires not just the named insured to notify the insurer, but every insured to send copies of all the documents and all the suit papers to National Union so they have some idea as to who thinks they're insured under the policy. And that wasn't done in this case either. And so there's really no dispute that there was no notice given to National Union that the consent judgment was being contemplated. And even if National Union had received Traveler's file in the first week of August, which it probably did, that consent judgment was well in the works going back to early July, which the record shows. And so based on those reasons, and the additional argument that we have in our brief that wasn't rebutted, which is the legally obligated to pay language, the judgment should be affirmed. The summary judgment should be affirmed. And that, the legally obligated to pay, it's true that when you have an estoppel issue, that probably doesn't relieve the insurer of its defense or of its indemnity obligation. But when you don't have that and you have an unconditional release of the judgment against the judgment debtor, there is no legal obligation to pay. And that removes it from National Union's insuring agreement. The court doesn't have any further questions. I will finish on that. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Schaefer?
We say there's obviously a request for coverage as well as defense in this case. We, as insurers through Greif, had to make it through their authorized representatives. They were informed with the complaint, the summons. They were advised it's a substantial case. They were advised that we feel that there's excess coverage in this to National Union. And they further were advised, how do you want to proceed? They were further called and asked, do you want to attend the settlement conference? And further were provided a complete copy of the file that said, please provide coverage. Please provide a defense. They have a duty to investigate and review their file. They have a duty to look into this. They did absolutely nothing, Your Honor. In regards to the Crocker case, that has no application. We didn't have to worry about whether they found out whether we were insured. We told them we were insured. We told them we were permissive users. We sent them the interrogatories and the exchange agreement where we had the right to use each other's trailers. We weren't asking whether we had coverage as Crocker. We told them that we had coverage. They just chose to ignore it. They chose not to deal with it. They were hoping to rely on the summary judgment issue, which is a moot point. If they won summary judgment, we didn't care. That was the issue about whether they're ICC employees or joint employees. The issue of this case is they were permissive users, which is undisputed. And in this case, it's undisputed that they failed to investigate. Under the Ohio law, they're required to look to see if the claims are within their policy and to find out if they're insured and acknowledge coverage. We cited the statutes. We cited the case law. They had a duty since they were the insureds. They didn't do that. They left them out to hang out to dry. Therefore, we were authorized to enter into consent judgment according to the Supreme Court of Ohio Sanderson case, as long as it's reasonable in terms, which Judge Simon found that it was reasonable in terms. We had no other alternative. The Train case says you step down, you provide coverage, and thereafter you can go for equitable subrogation. They failed to do that, Your Honor. That's their responsibility. At this point, they should be held liable. And if they pursue later on their avenue against Travelers, that's fine. But they were equally at fault as Travelers. They should be bound by the consent judgment.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.